The three of us have been working on a project for some time now. And bringing a well-known editor and owner of Inner City Books to visit us, Daryl Sharp. And with that, why don't you?
We've just got mock-up flyers right now just to start getting the word out. We'll have more official flyers once everything is set. We're still waiting on confirmation on a location for the Friday night lecture. So there'll be a Friday night lecture, which will be open to everyone. And then there will be a by invitation only workshop, and we're opening up to Gary's classes since we've all been so dedicated to this work first. And there will be 20 slots. And the premise for that is Daryl has written 20 books, and it's going to be an interactive kind of workshop where each person will read one of his books so that we cover them all, and then create some discussion questions that will lead to kind of a conversation with Daryl. So, yes, the lecture is going to be April 1st, and the workshop will be on the 2nd. So we'll pass these around and just take one. Also, a list of Daryl's books in case you want to take a look at that. I have left one of them off. I didn't realize it was a cumulative list, which we can't really have a discussion about. Right.
So we'd be covering 20 books?
Yes, but each person would just come up with maybe two or three discussion questions during to kind of jumpstart the conversation about that particular book. So
my sense is that we won't get all 19 books.
Yeah, it'll be 19. So about maybe two people will have to read the same book.
Yeah. My thought was it's pretty clear that President Jung is dying. And if it isn't dying, I think it should die. It's just become a mess. And I think board members will attest to that. So my thought was, well, you know, one door closes, well, let's open a door. And, you know, there have been folks, we've been studying Jung for decades here, and when there's a seminar, most of the seminars are shot at the lowest common denominator, which I think is unfair to all the people who've been working. So my thought was, let's have a seminar by invitation only. It's not to be a snob, but it's to single out people who have been in these seminars or on the board who have shown an interest so that everyone can enjoy a level of discussion that matches your previous experience. And the reason I sort of suggested this mode of him not presenting, but of a seminar, is that it really be a dialogue. And you got somebody here, his job will be to represent what he has said. Our job will be to kind of carry the discussion, meaning we can direct the discussion where we want. And the point would be that it's a back and forth. He is not going to hold forth, but we can shape it to the way we want it. And the big deal here, of course, is money. This is not cheap. Well, we figure about $2,500 plus or minus to pull this thing off. We kind of did this in secret because Daryl has been hesitant to commit. His health is not good, and I don't know whether it was the fact that I got him drunk a couple of times or what, but he has agreed to do it. And we thought, well, let's bring on the board now the Friends of Jung to help support it. My original thought was we'll put up some money and ask the board to make up what we don't. What I thought about is that's stupid. This is a Jungian program, so this is where you come in, Ann. We're going to ask the board for $1,000, and we'll make up what is not covered. We figured if we do get 20 people for the workshop, and if we do get, what did we figure?
30 to 40,
we'll be all right. The problem is, you know, suppose something goes wrong and people don't come or whatever. We'd like to have a backup. So I think we're going to ask the board for $1,000. Nobody's making any money. It means we lose less. That's all.
I have to say, I don't know how much pull I have.
Well, there's only three of you, so you got one third.
We'll see how the vote goes. I'm guessing, it's kind of a unilateral decision. Maybe that's my head. I'm just guessing.
Well, it's a board, so it really has to be done democratically. And if it isn't, then let us know, and we'll do something about it. Because there is a constitution. This is a legal entity with a board for that reason. And that's one of the reasons why the thing should die. But,
yeah.
And there are two other people. We'll talk to them. But I really hope you support it. And if you got a friend you want to bring, that's fine. We're not trying to exclude anybody, except we don't want to hear, what's it mean if you dream in color? We don't want somebody to dominate. We want it to be a group of like-minded people who have enough experience that they can dialogue with it. You know, Daryl knows everybody in the field. He's written 20 books. He's edited and published, 120. So he really knows the field. And so it gives everybody a chance to have an experience of an experience in seasoned Jungian. And plus, he's very affable. He's very easy to talk with. So, we'll maybe announce when more people are here, too. But I kind of wanted to get the ball rolling.
Can we pick out which book
maybe? Yeah, and I've got, if you want to buy it, fine. I've got all of them. You're welcome to borrow it.
And Daryl will be bringing us books. Oh, we will have his books there. He's very humorous. He uses humor a lot, you know, because we're all so serious about this work. But he uses humor as a tool to teach concepts and music lyrics as well. So it's really clever, I think, way to get into the feeling function. And
so we'll know ahead if we can start reading ahead of time.
If you want to commit, as soon as you commit to the workshop, you can choose your book. So if you want to commit early, you would have your choice. I'll borrow some of yours.
Yeah, I'll get them all out, and you're welcome to it. He sends me complimentary copies of everything he does. So, and a couple of them I may have blent out and never gotten back, but I've gotten most of them.
I think I have a couple, too.
And that's the way Young is, of course. His seminars that he had for discussions, the ones that are written out for discussions, like the questions, they were ahead of time. They were not open to the public.
No, they were not. And, you know, I hope you guys appreciate the quality of your participation here. I have a friend who was in training at the Boston Institute, and she said, you know, could I listen to a couple of what you guys do? This was a year or so ago, but I said, yeah, sure. So she came to the website, and she listened to a couple of our discussions. She says, what's going on here is better than what we're doing at the Boston Training Institute.
Wow.
So, you know, we are doing good stuff, and this is a chance to celebrate that and just have fun and learn Jung in a atmosphere of relaxed enjoyment.
When Sylvia Pereira came to speak at CTS, I was telling her, you know, about our class work, and she said, you're getting analyst training.
Yeah, we're doing, you know, anyone who spends two hours on a paragraph, he just got things very seriously wrong with him. Or he's learning Jung.
And there's really, how are you going to do it besides 2 hours of the
paragraph?
Well,
it takes what it takes.
Yeah.
Okay, so thanks, guys, for all the work you've done, too. Well, not that much, but...
Yeah.
Well, but I mean for this program. We stayed in touch with Daryl and finally got him to say okay. And I get an email about every 3 days. Oh, I'm so nervous. Do you think I should say it this way? Do you think I should say it that way? So he's excited. So, and he is a charming rascal. That's the best way to put it. And if anyone falls in love, it's your problem. Don't come crying to me. A little review. We've been dealing with this business of the old man and the young girl. It's nothing new, as you have seen and as I am learning. He's really working around a consistent theme from several angles, and that theme is basically the spiritual meaning of instincts. Instincts, of course, he inherited that idea from Freud of their importance, and he continued to acknowledge the importance of the instinct, but enlarged it to say instincts, that is to say, basically, you know, anywhere from crude sexual desire to the most spiritual eros, or resentment, anywhere from hatred to the most refined resistance, lead us into situations where we learn about ourselves, and that is in fact an intention of the instinct. So it has an intelligence. That's what Freud didn't deal with. Now, Jung is getting to this because he's got this erotic attraction, as best I can see here, for Tony Wolf. So this is not just about Tony Wolf. This is him wrestling with what he feels impelled to begin and what ranges of human experience go along with it. That is to say, we wouldn't have Jungian psychology without that relationship. So he, I don't think he knew that at the time, but we might say in retrospect, and therefore the instinct led him into just that situation which would help him birth a creative product. And that's the way instinct works at the deepest level. So the girl, Salome, all these images would represent that pool. Elijah would represent the wisdom or the intelligence or the lesson that comes out of these experiences. The old man in this one would represent that side of Jung which he had to sacrifice. The stuffy academic bean counter who wants to write, you know, linearly accurate articles that signify nothing. I don't know if I mentioned, whether I mentioned this here or not, but a friend of mine went to the Red Book exhibit in Zurich, at which Jung's grandson spoke. Did I mention that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the fellow said, what we see in the Red Book is how Jung intentionally discarded the academic model. And the reason he has not been accepted in mainstream work, the reason he's probably even been vilified by academics, because the attacks have come from academics, is that he consciously threw out that model. Why? Because it is inadequate for understanding the nature of the personality. And so what that leaves him with then at this point is not only recognizing how he has to reevaluate the role of instinct in his life, but that he has to also completely develop a new model of understanding. What's that model? That model is based on symbolic thinking as opposed to linear thinking. You've all heard my story about the Basudo. Let me just tell it real quick. A friend of mine, or a teacher of mine, was a district commissioner in a little British protectorate at that time in South Africa called Basutoland. It's since become a nation. I don't remember the name of it now. But it's really like a square mile within, or a couple square miles within South Africa, but it's its own country now. And it's an Aboriginal tribe. And my teacher was a linguist from Oxford, sort of like did his like sort of Peace Corps stint there for a couple of years as a district commissioner. And he learned the Basuto language because he was good at language. And he said one day I was sitting around. Well, first he said, when I got there, I looked in the garbage pile and there were about 350 bottles of vodka, empty bottles. So I thought, I got to do something, so that's not my fate. So that's how he learned the language and joined as much as he felt appropriate in sharing discussions with these people. So he said to the chief, can you tell me the difference between yourselves and me? What's the difference between a brown man, that's what they call themselves, what's the difference between brown people and white people? And the chief says, oh, that's easy. You think in thoughts and we think in pictures. So what Jung does then is develop another way of thinking. That way of thought is that old man in this scene. And that's what he has to overthrow. And that's why he says, you know, you're stuffy, you're boring, and so on. I think it's an enormous accomplishment that what he's going through here personally, later he works out in a myriad of ways in his psychology, his work on alchemy, his work on Gnosticism, is looking for different paradigms that express how we can transform instinct into meaning. And then his study of mythology, his focus on dreams, is the fruit of the realization the academic mind is inadequate for understanding the personality. So all that we're getting in these first images. So let's just review the last couple lines before we end it, which is on page 264. Go to the middle of the page. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 lines up. For the general rule also has a meaning and has not been set up for fun. See where I am? 264, second column, middle of the page. He always contrasts individuality and adaptation. Adaptation is the path of development appropriate to people who are not adapted. Sounds obvious, but practically that means the job is not focusing on their unique meaning, but on can they get to work on time? Can they follow through with what they say? Do they say one thing one minute and something else the next? Do they blame other people? Do they take responsibility for themselves? And that is what he is referring to as the general rule. It doesn't occupy a large amount of our practical Jungian work, because people who can get to the same place once a week or every other week and write a decent check is really an enormous accomplishment of consciousness. A lot of people, I'm sure you know, can't even do that. So most people come in pretty adapted. But he's recognizing that there's a difference between, he hasn't formed a concept of individuation yet, but he's realizing there is a point to being normal if you're abnormal, and there is a point to being able to be more than normal. That would be to be an individual. But you can't go on the individuation journey until you are responsible enough to be normal. So that is not said here, but that's where he's going to take this. So the general rule comprises much venerable work of the human spirit. Such persons are not capable of a general principle above the gendered, but only their imagination is capable of what they have lost. They have become their own imagination and arbitrariness to their own detriment. Meaning, if you emphasize to them the symbolic dimension, they will emphasize that aspect of their life instead of the practical, responsible details that they are faced with. That's just what he's getting clear. So that you...
You mean they use it for an excuse, well, I'm individualized, so I don't have to go.
Yeah, or, you know, no, I didn't pay my taxes this year. I was doing active imagination. or, you know, I was so busy listening to music and thinking about my dreams that I didn't go to the appointment. That kind of thing. Or, yeah, not to mention. Yeah, not to mention. That would be the very extreme. They need to remember the gender so that they wake up from their dreams to reality. So that makes sense. That's now we look back at that and say, oh yeah, but remember he is coming up with the thought that we have learned that we can look back on it with. So he's getting clear. There's a difference between those tasks which mean we need to become responsible and those tasks which we need to do to become ourselves. And in fact, I think for most of us, the fact that you're here on a snowy day says there's a degree of responsibility. Even in our situation, I find, at least within myself, that one is always doing both, looking at have I been responsible and what is my individual task. So these themes intertwine in practice, although I think in general you can say some people are working more on adaptation, some people are working more on individuation. But in fact, you see both strands. Because that irresponsible shadow is always ready to come in and say, oh, take it easy, oh, don't worry about that, oh, so what if you hurt their feelings, you know. Okay. Now we start a new idea. Well, I mean, a new phrasing of the old idea. It is as agonizing as a sleepless night to fulfill the beyond from the here and now. Let's just stop there. I think we talked about that as a highly intuitive idea, but as if by fulfilling our own lives, we are creating a substance somewhere of health. I know it's a weird idea. You actually do see it in dreams.
A substance of health?
Well, as if. You know, the idea is that we normally talk about is that we have an a priori identity. And what we try to do is live that on Earth. So if I am to write a book on Wolfgang Pauli, that is in my destiny to do. I do it. I actualize that potential here. But he's now putting it in the reverse. Not only am I actualizing a potential here, I'm fulfilling that possibility there. As if. But potential is something that exists in its own world. And by fulfilling it in the earth, on the earth, we are making a difference in whatever place that is transcendentally, for lack of a better word. Now remember, this is just intuitive thinking that's coming to him. I think the closest I could give an example is where it hasn't been fulfilled. It's passed on as a curse. I think, I won't give any details, but I think of a guy whose parents were horrible, were even thieves to their own siblings. Since then, his father has committed suicide, his sister has committed suicide, and his son died of cancer before the age of 40. As if that thing exists somewhere else and visits every life in a detrimental way. That might be a way to explain it in reverse. But anyway, it's admittedly an abstract and intuitive idea, but what he's trying to get at is somehow we leave a deposit somewhere when we, in the realm of potential, when we fulfill our own potential. Now, it gets worse. Namely, the other and the opposing in myself. So he is equating the beyond. That's just the last part of that sentence. To fill the beyond from the here and now, namely, the other and the opposing in myself. So he means that the beyond is an other in himself who opposes him. It doesn't make logical sense, but it's crucial. Anyone want to try to interpret that? How is the beyond the other and opposing in myself?
That part, you know, encounters the shadow or whatever you don't really attempt to look at, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. It's, again, it's not a logical thought. But what he's saying is this potential world doesn't meet us as some shimmering, beautiful rose on a spring morning. It meets us in the form of something in ourselves that opposes us. Another way to put that is the shadow knows of the transcendental pattern. And the way you get to know your transcendental pattern and fulfill it is to face those things in yourself that want to destroy you. See, he's merging two completely contradictory points in one sentence. So, I mean, practically, you think, oh, you know, I'll do my dream work and I'll discover who I am, whoopee-doo. And the first thing you do is you start dreaming if somebody wants to kill you. Or you get into a fight with somebody. Or you fall in love or lust with somebody that causes complications. Or you find you start hating somebody. And you think, oh my God, that's pulling me away from my spiritual destiny. And Jung is saying, no, that is the way spiritual destiny is announced.
And that's the contradiction that you're talking about.
That's the contradiction. Okay. That the highest comes through the lowest. Yeah.
I was a Bible study leader when I realized that I was falling in love with one of the women in the Bible study.
Yeah, that's it.
And I was.
Yep, that's it.
Absolutely horrified. And yet, being gay has been the thing that has released me. Even though I am still very much a people pleaser. If you could have seen me 25 years ago, you would be like, oh my gosh. I mean, I had no thoughts of my own. I was completely controlled from the outside, and all of a sudden, half of the world thinks I'm evil, and all I wanted to be was for people to think I was a good person.
Yep.
All that mattered to me.
Yep.
So it was a huge...
That's a perfect example.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Not wonderful at this
point. No, you see, and so here we get into this idea which will develop great length. The victory for the self is a defeat for the ego. And why Jungian psychology, though it emphasizes the transcendental, I think really at the foundation of its psychology, isn't flaky, because that transcendental comes through pains in the butt in daily life. Now you see, that's what that old man in the castle could not grasp. The linear mind could not accept this, because it's a logical contradiction that the highest comes through the lowest. Now, mythologically, it's not a problem when we say Christ was born in a manger. See, the image can express something. But which the thought can't grasp. It sneaks up like a fever, like a poisonous fog. So he's talking about how that a priori world comes on. It comes on and it poisons us. Where do you find that in dreams? People getting bit by snakes, by poisonous frogs. And they feel horrible, but very often it's the way the self is entering them. And when your senses are excited and stretched to the utmost, the daimonic comes as something so insipid and worn out, so mild and stale, that it makes you sick. You follow what he's saying there? There, I think he's talking about Tony Wolf. He's got to accept, in his inflated idea of what destiny is, that it's dealing with a flesh and blood woman.
Could we say that the idea of stale, insipid, and worn out has a slightly personal spin to him? It could come in other ways to a different kind of personality.
You lost me there. Try it again.
The idea of this thing coming as insipid, stale, and worn out, as he describes it, could we think of that as slightly personal to the way it came to him, and it could come to others?
Oh, I see. Differently?
Differently?
I think so. I think what he's confessing here is, you know, I have this grand scheme of life's meaning.
Because he's a great thinker.
Yeah,
and we're
exactly.
not all great thinkers.
Right. I have this great scheme of life. Mm-hmm. And now I got to deal with this damn woman.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, another silly love song. But that silly love song is going to contain the meaning of his life.
So if you're in the silly love songs, a very linear thought might be, if it's something you can...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or... ashamed of, or I tell you a story, I wonder if I can tell without giving away the person who's involved. He'll kill me if you figure out, but that's all right. A colleague was told me he was fascinated by a certain young black musician, female, he's male. And he said he couldn't stop thinking about her. And listening to her music till all hours of the morning. And I don't know, you're just a pervert. See, that's the humiliating... It doesn't make sense. Why would an old guy be fascinated with a 20-year-old woman? To the point where, like, he can't sleep. Well, about a week later, a woman called him up and showed up on his doorstep. I'll simplify the story. Who had been horribly sexually abused and even mutilated as a child, who was the spitting image of this musician. And they had an instant connection. See what I mean? That bizarre, you know, another guy might have gone out and tried to fund a 20-year-old prostitute. But if you realize, oh my God, this is an this is an emotional experience that doesn't make sense for my value system, but nevertheless, I'm feeling it.
And it was an incredible preparation for his actual experience.
That's what I mean. Yeah. Exactly. And I think she was so damaged, physically damaged even, as a child, that had she not felt that spark, a contact would not have been made.
And the music probably heightened his ability, his feeling function tremendously.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's an example of the banal, the stale, the odd, the perverse, that's the way life moves forward if we can accept it and know to realize where's this going? Live with it until we know where it's going.
It's like if it weren't like that, we wouldn't pay any attention.
Yes. Yeah. On the other hand, there that moral intellectual mind will throw that out. Oh, it's just a 20-year-old. What am I doing?
We're not examining it and confess it as sin and put it away.
Put it in a box. Yeah. So the rational mind says, oh, it's nonsensical. And the moral mind says it's wrong. Both of those are true. Unfortunately, there's a meaning to it. Skip a sentence, and I think you can see in the context of my example, startled and disgusted, you long for the return of the supernal beauties of your visible world. You spit out and curse everything that lies beyond your lovely world, since you know that it is the disgust, scum, refuge of the human animal who stuffs himself in dark places, creeps along sidewalks, sniffs out every blessed animal, and from the cradle to the grave enjoys only what has already been on everyone's lips. But here you must not stop. Do not place your disgust between your here and now and your beyond. That's just a beautiful sentence right there. Here and now is what's coming to you. The beyond is the meaning of it. And don't kill it with disgust or judgment. The way to your beyond leads through hell. And in fact, through your own holy particular hell, whose bottom consists of knee-deep rubble. I think he knows what he's talking about. Skip a little bit, next paragraph. Everything odious and disgusting is your own particular hell. I think you got the basic idea there. And he continues, 265. We got the basic idea, but some of this is just pleasant. You really want to rage, and then your hellish absurdity stretches for miles. See where I am? And my favorite part, good for you if you can swear.
Yeah, I love that part.
You will find that profanity is life-saving.
Yes. That'd be a good bumper sticker.
You know, he's right there when he says, if you can swear. Because yeah. I meet people that
can't swear.
They can't, it just won't come out.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to be to describe an entire dimension of their own nature. I'm not sure what that is, but
you know, I worked with Jung's grandson for a while, and I asked him, you know, I just wanted, what was he like, you know? He'd say, well, you know, he taught me to swear, he taught me to drink, he taught me to smoke cigarettes, and he taught me to appreciate women. And he said, that's the way he was. See, that is so important, because we're seeing how low and high aren't two separate things.
When I left the church, when I was asked to get out of this job, and we had like a goodbye party, and I told them that I thought my biggest contribution was that I had taught a lot of them to say crap. Because they were all so... And I did. That was...
I was thinking of Robert Johnson, maybe some of you heard the story that when he, you know, he lost his leg as a boy. I think I think he was walking, I mean, it was one of these just horrible accidents. He was walking between two cars, and the parking brake on one, at that moment, broke, and the two cars went into each other, and he got pinned between the two bumpers, and he lost his leg. So you can imagine for a, you know, what it is for a boy who can't play sports and, you know, and chase girls and things. He grew up without any of that. And so he started in therapy, and he couldn't get anywhere. His analyst said, well, just go home and think about what you feel and write it down. So he went home. He said, I tried to sit and think. I couldn't get it. So I went back. The guy said, well, try it again. So he went home, tried it again. The guy says, well, when you sit down at the typewriter, see what the typewriter wants to say. And he said, you know, all that typewriter said for years was, God damn it. But that's the foundation. If you can't say that and feel the resentment for what fate has caused, how do you begin to transform it?
I must say that personally, I really tried to keep my countenance sometimes, but find out that in the end, if I can get that out, mm-hmm. it's a release. It really helps. And I keep saying, why do I have to use profanity to get on? But it works for me.
It's fertilizer for the soul. Okay. It really is.
All right, thank you.
And Von Franz, I swear I didn't know you. I knew Von Franz. She swore like a banshee. And it was not vulgar. That's what's so amazing. Because it was in tension with this brilliance and this great love. No, he's just back off. Well, off a little bit. Look a little further down. Quietly look into everything to excite your contempt or rage. So see, that's the other in him then, that is the beginning of knowledge. And we have to acknowledge what we feel, and then we have to look at it. Ask it, why are you in my life? Why am I feeling this way? Speak to me. What are you trying to teach me? I know Jung's feeling about emotion was, better to blow your cool than not. But when you do, then ask yourself, what complex in me was I expressing? So it's not just, he's not saying just go around and flying off the handle, but if you do, take it as an opportunity to ask yourself what part of you was being expressed, and is that the best way to express that part of yourself? And often it's the entry into your life of a new aspect of the self. You give soul to the soulless.
So that other is soulless? Is that what he's saying?
Well, I think it feels soulless. Okay. It feels like rage or contempt or lust. It feels like the now worldly reactiveness. But to give soul to it is to say, okay, what's its meaning? What part of me was behind it? And is there a part of me behind it that wants to be part of the way I live my life? Maybe even part of what directs me in the way I live my life. But I think more and more, and it might be, I don't know whether this is, it's hard for me to judge, but whether this is becoming increasingly a problem due to the computer, I think we are less in touch with our emotions.
Well, although on the computer, I mean, people just say mean things on the computer that they never say to somebody's face. I think sometimes in a way it gets you in touch with your emotions, but it breaks the emotions and the consequences apart in a way that you're not realizing how much, you know, if you say something mean in a group of people, you can see their reaction from a computer and say something horrible. Or, you know, you can receive an email and you can think, oh, this person is trying to say this, but they really were not in cross-road or
Mm-hmm.
However, yeah. I think it breaks apart the consequences of emotion from the emotion. So I think
that's a good point.
The human aspect is totally removed from that.
I think that's what problem is coming in. I'm not sure how, you know, I don't know what that means, but I guess it's that point now, like, well, what was it?
So we're kind of left with figuring out ourselves with that. If you don't know that person, if you know the person you're changing emails with, you know what their reactions are going to be. You have some basis of knowledge about that person. But if you don't, then that takes away all those nonverbal cues that really do inform us emotionally when we're having a conversation with someone that I think is so important. But I do think it frees people to say whatever they
want. It's cyberbullying, and I don't know if people would go that far face-to-face, but they would see that hurt, and then it's totally split off. Mm-hmm. I also think of, like, emails at work, and, you know, you'll send out an email, and your intentions were good to inform somebody, but it got misinterpreted, but they didn't come back to you, they talked about with everybody else in the office about how horrible you are, and then people you think you're like out on your butt and everybody's sitting here like no idea what.
Yeah.
I mean, I've experienced that where it creates a complication that probably wouldn't have happened in personal interaction.
Or if it did, it would be a much more limited. I remember I was.
It would be more linear and understood.
There would be a way to catch it and stop the negative consequence. Whereas with email, the negative consequence can blow out of proportion way before you ever even notice it.
Yeah, paranoia is complex to have a heyday.
Especially if you get replied to all of it.
Well, now here's my paranoia. If we think about what Jung is doing here, I believe he is trying to overturn 2,000 years of Western history, which has denigrated instinct, either from the religious standpoint or from the intellectual standpoint. And what he's trying to do is find a way to bring it back, first of all, that we experience it, and second of all, that its full nature can be available to us, namely that it's got this intelligence within it. And I ask myself if the computer age is exactly working against this process, that we are... In a way, the computer is incredibly Christian. It separates emotion and relationship. Well, that's what we've been doing for 2,000 years. And Jung is trying to overturn that, and the mechanical, when I say computer, I mean cell phones, you know, the relation through technology and the role that technology assumes in the way we live our lives. How many times has somebody said to you, no, the computer won't let me do that? So the computer is controlling. So I just wonder if that is working against what Jung is doing, and it's another reason why the modern mind doesn't want to grapple with Jung, because he's fighting that tendency, tooth and nail.
And the result of that was the two world wars, because the emotion was split off.
Yeah.
When it came up, it was horrible, and I think it's the same concept of the emotion is split off, and then the consequences come up, and they're way bigger than the cyberbullying. You know, the consequences
are
still there, and they come up, but they come up in a much larger form.
Mm-hmm. Than yeah, actually, well, just a thought. Anyway, let's finish this section, and we'll take a break. Your values want to draw you away from what you presently are to get you ahead of and beyond yourself. Your being, however, pulls you to the bottom like lead. You cannot at the same time live both, since both exclude each other. But on the way, big word there, on the way, you can live both. Therefore, the way redeems you. You cannot at the same time be on the mountain in the valley, but your way leads you from the mountain to the valley, from the valley to the mountain. Much begins amusingly and leads into the dark. Hell has levels. A basic idea there is how, again, the height would be the great accomplishment and potentials you have for accomplishment. The depths would be the very difficult emotions that potential announces itself in.
Well, that's very Taoist, that way between them.
The way between the opposites. So the way is the resolution of the opposites.
And this is a different way than the one he was talking about last week, which was like the urban light way.
The what?
Last time we were talking about a different kind of way, one that was the way of the world,
yeah.
Right? And this is a different one. This is the way of the self.
This is the way of the self. Do you have a stretch? And then we'll start one of the lowest.